Hello and welcome. This is Rohan this side.
And it's Viraj here. Welcome to the Affairnama podcast.
So there's a case going on, Apple versus Facebook, okay? What is this case about? First, let us discuss what is Facebook ka revenue model, okay? Facebook is free, right? If you want to make an account on Facebook, you want to use Facebook, it's all free. All you have to do is just register. But if Facebook starts giving everything for us for free, then how is it going to make money? The answer is through ads. Now, ads have been around us for centuries now, right? However, what Facebook specializes in is giving you targeted ads, okay? It's not like your daily soap commercial where a soap is being marketed to each and every person. May it be a five-year-old child or say a businessman or say a vendor. It's been advertised to everyone, right? However, on Facebook, you can advertise to very specific people. Okay, so say for example, I sell guitars. And Facebook, through its data, knows that this person called Viraj is interested in music. And from Viraj's Facebook usage, that he listens to and watches many videos where people are just covering songs on guitar, right? So now, I as a person who is selling guitars, I have a target audience readily available on Facebook that only these people I want to show my advertisement to. Hence, it's going to save cost on my part because I don't have to advertise to each and every person. So it reduces cost on my end. Secondly, it's good for Viraj as well, right? Because now Viraj does not have to go to 10 different places. And Viraj does not have to look at 10 different ads, 9 out of which he won't be interested in. So it's a win-win situation, honestly, I feel. I get to sell my guitars to targeted audience on Facebook. Viraj gets to see targeted advertisements, which he might really, really be interested in. And not random ads of, say, shaving cream and some other day some soap or some fourth day about books and pens. So very targeted advertising. So I think it increases the efficiency. It's a win-win situation for sellers. It's a win-win situation for the buyers as well. And Facebook obviously gets a cut in between because Facebook is the platform on which sellers are providing their ads and buyers are clicking on those ads through Facebook, right? So that's how Facebook works. Here comes in Apple, right? Now for Facebook to give targeted advertisements, Facebook will have to collect a lot of data, right? It's not asking you for money. What it is asking you for is data. So Viraj, whatever he is doing on Facebook, which types of videos he's liking, which types of memes he's sharing, etc., etc., all of that needs to be captured by Facebook. And only after analysis of that data can Facebook give targeted ads according to his preferences, right? But Apple disagrees. Apple feels that its users should have a say whether it wants Facebook to get its data or not. So what is Facebook doing is, it's put a, I think it's in the new version of its iOS, its operating system, where every app will have to ask permission to its user. Okay, so if I'm using an iPhone and I download Facebook app, the first time it is going to ask me, Facebook wants to capture this data, am I okay with that? And I can refuse. So that's what Apple thinks. Okay, Apple feels that each and every user should know, firstly, what all data is being used by which app, and should have the right to say no to any data that might be used by any app. So here, I mean, obviously this is great for users, right? It's great for users because they get some autonomy and some control over their data. That's one thing. However, this cripples Facebook's model, right? Facebook revenue model, because Facebook does not have a paid version or a subscription. Only thing it is asking for is your data. Now if I go from iPhone and use Facebook without giving my data, it's as if I'm using it for free. Even earlier it was free, however you were paying some data as your fee, but now through Apple you don't even have to do that. Then the entire revenue model crumbles. And if Apple was like, say, Nokia, who no one asks for and has very few people using its mobile, it's okay, right? Like a few 1,000 people, a few lakh people are not going to give me the data, give data to Facebook, that's okay. However, if Apple decides to do something like that, that would be like around 30-40% of its users. And if it cannot get 30-40% users' data, it's going to be a problem. Yeah. So that's how this case, I mean, I've tried to lay down the entire case in front of you. Now, what do you think about, I mean, which side are you on? Are you on Facebook side or are you on Apple side?
Actually, I have an open-ended answer to this question. I believe that whenever there are two huge corporations that are fighting, we should actually take sides. I mean, I feel both of them are wrong to a certain degree, and I'll get to why. I do applaud Apple's initiative to give the control over whether the user wants to share the data or not. But I sense a little irony in Apple being the one leading this lawsuit. Because if you remember correctly, in the past year itself, Apple had some issues with other applications making payment that is not actually going through, you know, your Apple Pay. So any subscription-based application that you're getting, you are supposed to pay that through Apple, and you are supposed to connect your credit card to Apple so that all the transactions that are being done, it's going through Apple. And
basically, I think that is more about Apple getting a cut, Apple getting a percentage of that transaction. So Apple, I think, felt that because, say, for example, Amazon Kindle, which sells ebooks, if anyone purchases an ebook from an app called Amazon Kindle, and that Amazon Kindle app was downloaded from Apple Store, right? Because it was downloaded from Apple Store, whatever purchases are made on that app called Amazon Kindle, a percentage of that should also come to Apple. That's what Apple was saying. And then what people did was they just said, okay, we don't want to pay Apple because our app, Apple is doing nothing. So we should not be liable to pay any fees to Apple. And hence what they started doing is they started giving a link to buy things in their apps. So when you press that link, you go to some other website, which is their official website, through which Apple cannot demand a percentage in return.
But don't you think in both the cases, they are just trying to monopolize the situation into gaining, you know, the higher ground, let's say. Now, Facebook wants to put as many ads as they can, as many relevant ads as they can. And since it's a revenue model, but I think that is the same case with Apple. Like, I don't think in terms of software, there's iCloud subscription, but I think that doesn't account to a lot of revenue for them. And I think even they were trying to increase the revenue pool that they had by that decision that they made. Yeah, I feel it's just about monopoly and control. Eventually, whoever comes out of this, I mean, 2 years, I feel both of them are equally shady, I think. Although Apple does provide a lot of privacy option and gives user a lot of control. In the end, I would say that I would support Apple. The decision that I made is to choose between the lesser evils and not, you know, not that I think that Apple is any better than Facebook.
But I think that's to be expected, right? Both of these are for-profit companies, registered as for-profit companies. And obviously their end goal is to make profits, keep making as much profits as they can for as long as they can. So I think that's fair. You said that everyone wants control, everyone wants to monopolize everything, and I think that's the game, isn't it? The game is to monopolize and capture the majority market share. So I think that's okay. Then with respect to control, I think it's okay to try to monopolize. It's just that you follow the law of the land, and if someone thinks that you're doing something wrong, that is going to be taken care in the court of law, right? So I think that's okay. For example, now two people think that the other party is doing something wrong, the case is in the court and the court is going to decide who's right, who's wrong. So I'm okay with that. Like, we'll try to monopolize, but I'm hoping that we have good laws in place to tackle these kinds of quarrels. And with respect to privacy, I think even why Apple is bringing all this privacy into the picture, into their lineup, is because they want more profits, right? It's Apple is a premium brand. You pay a lot of money for Apple products, and that is one of the things that they are trying to offer you, right? I think if you're a privacy freak, I think you would go with Apple because their privacy protocols, and now that they're making such decisions, okay, that you will have the right to give or share your data with each and every app, you'll have that control. I think that's a premium offering that the Apple is trying to give, because Apple can see what's going around it, right? Apple sees that there's some discomfort with respect to privacy and data sharing, and I think it's just capturing that. Not to say that Apple has changed its stance or not. I think even from the times of Steve Jobs, privacy has been something very important to the company, right? I remember seeing an interview where Steve Jobs is saying just that it's okay for us to give user data to developers. It's just that you ask the users first. That's all he said back, I think around 10 years, 15 years back. And now I think Tim Cook is just bringing that into action now. So I think that's cool.
But do you think monopolies always, you know, make the right decision? Considering they have a lot of power, so do you think they'll make the right decisions, or they'll make decisions that are more profitable to them?
No. I think you do not even have to give me an example for this. I'm saying they always make decisions to make more profit. Like, they are under no obligation to do the right thing. They're always going to make more profits. So, and I think that's the game, and I think you should be okay with that, and you should just make good laws around it so that no one is exploiting their power. And I think that there's a lot of good that comes out of monopoly as well. Like, obviously, monopolies are bad. Everyone knows what the problems with monopolies are. However, we often overlook what are the advantages of monopolies. Say, for example, Google. Google is like one of the leaders in, or say, for example, online search engines, in video streaming, say, for example, through YouTube, etc., etc. Google has a monopoly over a large number of things on internet. And because of that, I get free Gmail. I get free, say, for example, the video call we are doing right now, it's free for us. I get free Google Drive. See, I get some space for free for my entire life. So there's so many free things that I'm using because of Google. And that is because Google is a monopoly, right? And because Google is so huge that it makes so much money, there are many services which it can offer for free. So I think there are some good things which come out of monopoly as well. I think it's a problem for me when it is actively not allowing new players to come in, for which you need laws. And the other problem is when it is trying to buy the people behind law, then it's a huge problem. For example, Apple is known to sit on a huge cash pile, right? So, say for example, Apple wants to do something in India. I'm sure there was a time when Apple could have just thrown some money and make new laws which will suit itself, buy in people from our parliament maybe. So, yeah, that's also a second problem. If you have monopoly, you have a lot of wealth, and then wealth can then create problem because then they can buy people out.
But again, it's not that it's wrong that they are for profit, but what if the law becomes the obstacle for them to profit? So I think we can talk about EU laws, that the European Union is very strict about privacy laws and all. And I think for someone like Mark Zuckerberg, it must have been very difficult for him to try to bribe his way into convincing them to make the laws a little lenient. So I feel the whole data tracking and shadow profiles that Facebook creates, I think those factors are the ones that make me reconsider that, you know, monopoly may not be a great idea.
They won't buy the law. There's an official, legal, more decent term called lobbying. They'll just try lobbying. They'll put millions and billions of dollars into lobbying, and eventually they'll be hoping that it's going to work. Yeah, so whenever I say that, okay, they're just going to buy people, I don't mean that they'll actually go and bribe members of parliament in India or EU members. I think they'll have a think tank established, they'll write research papers which will be funded by them, which will tell the data privacy issues are overblown, etc., etc., and they'll try to lobby for changes which will favor them. And I would agree that, yeah, whatever you said about Facebook, right, I think my problem with Facebook is they're not transparent enough. And I think that comes from the ethics of the company, right? If you have very strong values for your company, then these problems generally don't arise. Or even if they do arise, they are rectified very quickly. I don't know, Mark Zuckerberg is so young, and like this is his first company and it has already made him billions of dollars. I don't know how competent he or his colleagues are. I don't know. But I think you need very good morals and values within your company to firstly grow it to such a big extent, which he has done anyway. So maybe that itself is, maybe he has something which other people don't. Or maybe it was just luck, or maybe it was just great timing for Mark Zuckerberg that he made such a huge empire. And now he's just playing with things like privacy and data filtering, etc. And Facebook has been under fire for so many things in the last decade, right? It's been privacy, Cambridge Analytica, and taking down posts in one place under one value system and not taking them under some other geographical location where it could be a problem for its revenue model, so on and so forth. So I think that's not okay. I think you need very strong moral values to sustain a company, I think. And I think that's where Apple stands out, because Apple has this legacy of Steve Jobs, a visionary. It's been in the market for such a long time. And I feel Apple has strong values, and it shows. And I think that is going to decide whether your company is going to sustain or not. If Facebook keeps running into such problems, eventually the investors are going to lose confidence in this company. Its stock is going to reduce in value and things are going to crumble. I think that's how I see the world working.
Talking about morals and Facebook, these two things are very opposite, because if you watch any interviews of Mark Zuckerberg in the early 2015-16 or so, you'll find out in most of his interview, the process he explains of developing new technologies or working on new technologies is that he says that you start with any idea and you just go through it. You don't think about it, you just go through it. And whatever the outcome is, based on that outcome, you shape your plan or you change your plan or map out the plan based on things that are happening. So I think it quite well explains why they have been running into a lot of problems, because his ideology or the way he thinks is that you're supposed to just go through it, whatever lead you find with some technology, and if it turns out okay, it's okay then. And if it doesn't turn out okay, you're supposed to make up for the losses. So I guess he should have completed his Harvard degree.
No, but I think I would agree with him, yaar. I mean, see, if you're 1%, 2 people, 5 people working on a new technology, new product, I think that's how even I would think. However, I think the change comes when your company grows to a certain point, and then you start thinking about its consequences, and then you start contemplating, okay, what are the pros and cons, what harm and what good am I doing to the society. And I think, I mean, Facebook crossed that line decades ago. I mean, I don't know when was Facebook made. If it was made after 2000, then decades ago does not make sense, but at least a decade ago, I think Facebook crossed that line. Yeah, definitely a decade ago. I think 2008 around Facebook started, right? So within 3-4 years, Facebook was so huge. I think that would have been the tipping point for any leader to think about, okay, what am I doing with this product and what are the consequences? Yeah, and I think, I mean, I don't know. This feels like more of a conversation towards leadership in general. Like, can you stick to your values? I remember it was around 4 or 5 people of us during a Tad the Tech meeting in my house, where we were thinking, okay, is it okay to leave your values when things start going down and the times are tough? And I think we drew a graph where we had, I think, difficult times on x-axis. Left side is easy times, right side is difficult times, and moral values. Upper is high moral, niche is low moral values. And most of the people just say that, okay, if the times are easy, I'll be honest, pay my income taxes, etc., etc. But when push comes to shove, I'm just going to abandon all of my values and just do whatever is needed to ensure survival. And I think that's weird to me, because, I mean, I'm also, obviously, if my life is in danger, I'm not going to be honest and all. I'll rob and I'll eat so that I don't die. That's an extreme. However, even I think many people just give in very early and much before that point. And it surprises me that people are okay with that. For example, when you go to sleep, And if to have a good night's sleep, I think you need to have a good self-image, right? And how long will you be not honest with yourself? Someday you'll have to come face to face with your real self, right? That friend, you, for you, these values are just words. It's some definitions that you know, you don't actually follow them. And how will you be okay with yourself? They say, right, you need to be comfortable with your body. I think that's very similar. A very similar logic also applies to you need to be comfortable with yourself, the kind of person you are. And that bothers me. I mean, so many people would just abandon their values. I think I see that in my classroom every day. People copy left and right even after the stakes are so low. And it really, really disturbs me. It disturbs me a lot when my students copy. Even when the stakes are low. I mean, for a few, I would even understand when the stakes are very high, right? If you're writing a final exam and whether you go to the next class or not depends on this exam. I think even I would copy. Okay, maybe in some universe I might copy. Or maybe in some universe I've already copied. I don't want to go into details. but that I can understand. But when the stakes are very low and you know that it's just for you to get feedback on, even then you start copying, I feel, friend, come on. This has just become a habit for you.
So I think it's quite difficult to go back to what you were doing. Like, all of a sudden, studying for an exam and writing it honestly becomes an alien concept. Okay, so the thing that you were talking about, you said that if you were at that position, you would just go with whatever idea you feel like and you'll think about the outcomes afterwards.
Correct.
And I feel Elon Musk does the same, I think. But I don't see his company and Facebook anywhere near, because the way he does it is it's different. It's accepting responsibilities, and he has his own values. He has his own values that he does business with. And I think Elon Musk, even he didn't, you know, get overnight success. He was also struggling, just like Jeff Bezos was once. I think it really depends on what kind of a person you are, what values you have. And especially when you're running such a huge scale operation, I think you should always consider things that could go wrong.
You know, something that I'm also wondering about these days is, do you think the market is going to react positively towards sustainability? That's something that I'm thinking about these days. Say, for example, I tell people, okay, this is a fund that invests only in companies which have sustainability at the center of their product or their service. Do you think people are going to buy that particular fund? I think the answer is no. However, because obviously, why do you invest? You invest because you want to make more money, you want to preserve your wealth, so on and so forth. So hence you invest. So you don't invest to change the shape of the future. So I feel people are not going to invest. I would not invest personally. I will just look at the rolling returns for the last 3 years, 5 years, who's the fund manager, etc. And that's how I'm going to invest. However, you also do see some part of it playing out in the real world. For example, the valuations of companies which work towards green energy, I can see many people investing in them, seeing the future returns. Like, people know now that fossil fuel is something of the past and hence they're not going to invest in that. Instead, they'll invest in a company which is doing solar farms or doing windmills, etc. So I do see that also playing out. But that is happening because the legal incentives are changing, right? Paris Climate Summit comes in. All the world leaders see, okay, yes, we're going to try and limit greenhouse gas emissions, and hence the laws and policies come out in such a way that those policies favor such sustainable companies, and hence people start investing. But it's something that I've been thinking about. There are two extremes, right? One extreme is capitalism is bad and it's going to just destroy the earth, end of story. The other side, which I see as a small hope, is no, people are aware of this. People are obviously going to react to profits and wealth creation. But even through that, they want to look at what is sustainable. If they see, okay, this is something that is going to make a lot of money, but it is not sustainable, I don't think people are going to put their money there. That's how I'm thinking. And that's this spectrum which I keep wondering about these days.
I personally feel that I don't think anyone would invest. I didn't think about the exact question, but on the similar lines to this question, I used to think about the fact that anything that is sustainable, anything that wants to become mainstream and is sustainable, I think it's generally opposed by the companies that are already, you know, they are selling petrol, diesel, fossil fuel. So I think for them, it becomes about their own livelihood, their own earnings. So this idea of green energy and sustainability, I think, although on a surface level, it's good for everyone in general, but it does affect businesses. And if you think about it, there are people that work on petrol pumps. There are people that work in oil rigs in the middle of the sea. What about them? If you switch to a sustainable source, they at some point will lose their jobs. At some point, it's bound to happen that we will run out of fossil fuels and we won't have the non-renewable resources that we are dependent on. So at some point, we are bound to run out. So what I feel would be a smart decision is to transition into sort of sustainability. It somehow improves the profit. So maybe I don't think anyone would really gravitate towards this idea that something is sustainable, so yeah, I'll invest in that. But it has to be something related to the economy. So it has to be profitable. Anything that is sustainable also has to be profitable.
True.
But otherwise, if you look at a company like Nike or H&M, they outsource their labor to China. So now that the situation that unfolded, that Uyghurs are put in concentration camps, they are made to work in, you know, sweatshops in very horrible conditions. Now that this thing got out, Nike decided that they won't be outsourcing their labor to Xinjiang province. They won't be outsourcing their labor there. So I think it's the culture and the economy that together will move our dependency on non-renewable resources to much more sustainable options that can actually help us in the future. Not just to, you know, feed ourselves, but to survive as well.
Yeah, see, an interesting word you used was cultural also, right? Not just profit, but also the cultural aspect of a business. So I think the word I would use would be conscience. So I think the world has that conscience now, and slowly it is building that conscience. I think there is a group of people in this world who has been living a very luxurious life without even knowing it. Like, people who have been born in well-to-do families, they don't even know what poverty is because they have never seen it. They have been going to good colleges, they have been going to good cinema halls, they have been going to good cafes, so they don't know what poverty is, right? And then when they come to know, okay, there is this company whose service or products they enjoy, and the background of these products and services so-and-so, they are just horrified and they just feel so ashamed that, okay, I'm not doing anything great in this world, but I'm actually doing something bad in this world. And I think it hits their conscience and they say, okay, that I'm going to boycott this particular enterprise. And I know people who do that. Like, when we go out for shopping, there will be a few people who will say, ki jab, when we come across H&M, they'll say, okay, H&M se buy nahi karna, because whatever. So it's basically the conscience of people, right? And hence, I think that's the hope I have for the world, that at some point of time, people's conscience is also going to play into the economy and where the money goes. Because the person who said to me that I'm not going to buy from H&M has a lot of money. Okay, they can buy from anywhere they want, but they're actively avoiding those. Now, that is an indication for other enterprises as well. See what happened to H&M. We should also be aware of that and not make the same mistake twice, right? That's one thing. And second thing is about renewable energy, right? I think sustainability is one thing and renewable energy is other. It's, although they're kind of related. You said, right, if you move on to renewable energy, many people are going to lose their jobs, petrol pump, this, that. I think, firstly, people losing their job, no one cares, okay? Even now, the banks are being privatized, they are like doing Andolan and all. Their efficiency is zero, but Andolan efficiency will be high. So, no one cares about your jobs, okay? All people care about is getting things for cheap and efficiency. So, forget about them. But if you do want to consider them for any reason, I would say renewable is more efficient for them as well and for the entire world. However, that's in the long run. That's the problem with renewables, right? In the long run, it's going to be efficient and profitable. For example, if you install a solar panel over your house, it's going to cost a lot. You are not ready to part that initial funding required to put that solar panel. But after 10 years, you get whatever you get for free, right? So I think there is this middle phase where I think the government will have to come in place, right? Saying that, okay, if you use petrol, we'll put more tax on you. If you use solar, we'll give you tax exemption. And that's how that transition will have to take place. So overall, in large run, but wrong. Overall, in long run, it's obviously more profitable, efficient, good for the environment. But intermediate phase will have to be taken care either by people's conscience or by government subsidies, etc. And people who are going to lose their jobs, obviously they're going to lose their jobs, but people, children of the people who lost their jobs will know that petrol pumps is not an option for us. I better study, say, electrochemistry so that I can work in solar cells or something.
But do you think conscious will be really effective for, you know, moving non-renewable to renewable sources? Because when you use the word conscious, actually, in my mind, this one thing clicked, that was the poultry industry, the meat industry. So I've heard that it accounts to around 71% of the pollution that happens, and the meat factories or whatever waste they have, it causes a lot of pollution basically. But I think a lot of people are aware of that. It's a wrong thing to kill another living animal, but we still eat chicken, we still eat meat. So do you think there will be exceptions here in our conscience? Because people will say that, oh, chicken is very tasty. But yes, there is an alternative to meat, that is this plant-based meat. But the idea remains the same, that it has been a very long-running thing that animals have feelings. You cannot eat meat. And if you're eating meat, you're contributing to a lot of pollution. It's the same example of children copying. Like, at some point, just give up. Even when the stakes are very low, we just give up all our values and we just stop caring about things. So do you think that the same thing will happen to, say, solar energy or sustainable energy? Because I know these are contrastingly different things, but what I feel is when you use the word conscious, I think that was the thing that clicked to me. I've heard a lot of times that you're not supposed to hurt animals. Animals have feelings as well. But now I have come to a point where I no longer care about all those things. Although I know that if I stop eating meat, it will reduce a lot of pollution.
I think at the end of the day, what is going to work is economics and experience also. But at the end of the day, these two things are going to be the main drivers of whatever direction our future is going to take. So first is economics, right? I mean, I said economics and experience. I'll give you an example. There are a lot of plant-based meats that are coming out, as you said, right? There are many plant-based meats that are coming out these days. And say, for example, if I do a blind test on someone who loves chicken, okay? If I do a blind test and they eat two types of meats, one is the actual chicken and the other one is a plant-based chicken meat, and they cannot make out the difference between two, I think that's game over. Then they do not really care whether it's plant-based or actual chicken. But not just that, what if it's cheaper? The plant-based meat, because it's made in factory and it's made in large quantities and there's no living thing involved, so less number of variables. So it's cheaper. And secondly, what if it's tastier? Like in a blind test, the person is preferring one over the other, and the one which is preferred is actually the plant-based meat. If that's the case, that it's cheaper on the pocket and on the wallet, and the experience is even better, I think that is going to be the main driver of the changes we see in the future. That's one thing. And the second thing, I think, about conscience, right? Do you think people will be able to walk the talk and really follow their values? I think I do see it playing out in small ways. So obviously, first, you're going to try the easier things, right? Whenever when I wanted to become a vegan, I did not directly start becoming a vegan from day one. I tried vegetarianism for about a year. So I tried vegetarianism because it was very easy to me. There was anyway no meat being prepared in my house, so it was super easy for me. So whatever is easy, I could do, right? And even my friend who just said that I'm not going to buy anything from H&M, it was very easy, right? Because baju mein, for example, Reliance hai, uske baju mein Tanishq hai, and whatever. So it's very easy. So whatever is easy, at least that they can start. And I think that itself is going to go a long way. And with the difficult things, I think networking effect will have a play. So say, for example, 5-10 years ago, if you tell someone that you're a vegan, You'll be the joke of that group. Even now, I'm the joke of the group whenever... I mean, I'm not a vegan right now. But whenever I say, okay, I'm not going to eat meat or I'm not going to drink milk or whatever, I'm generally the joke of the group. And I'm okay with that. However, slowly, slowly, the number of vegan people in the world is rising. Every day, the number of people who consider themselves as vegans is rising. It is slowly going to have that networking effect. For example, 100 years ago, if you just start running, okay, around the town saying I'm exercising, people are going to laugh at you. Ye kya pagal hai ki, does not have any reason to run, even then he or she is running, and they are saying, okay, it's good for health. No one is going to buy that, and everyone is going to laugh at you. Slowly, slowly, the number of runners started increasing, the research started coming out, and now if you don't run, if you tell someone that, okay, I sit at my home for the entire day, I don't exercise, I don't go to gym, I don't go out for walks, then people are going to laugh at you. It's 180 degree change, right? I think slowly, slowly that will happen to veganism also. That's my hope, that it will have some networking effect. Right now, only 1 out of 10 people, say for example, in a group are vegan. Slowly, slowly that will become 2 people, 3 people, 4 people, etc., etc. And the more people becoming vegan, the more options also you have, right? Earlier, 5-10 years ago, it was very, very difficult to get vegan options. You had to ask, okay, isme kya kya ingredients hai, and then you decide whether it's vegan or not, and that's how you order. But now you slowly, slowly see vegan restaurants, you slowly see restaurants having different sections for vegans in their menu. So I think slowly that is also changing. Domino's has come up with plant-based meat. McDonald's has come up with something similar. So I think it will also have networking effect, and it will be easier for people like you. You said you don't care anymore now, right? But when you say, for example, go out with me and I tell you, okay, Viraj, here is a vegan restaurant, I'm sure you won't say no, because you have me with you to push you there. So I think slowly it will have some networking effect, and it will start improving anyway.
Okay, so I think we are done with this episode. I would like to thank all the listeners that have supported us with this podcast. And you can extend your support by sharing this podcast with your friends and family. So for now, goodbye and have a good day. We'll see you in the next episode.